Hello, I'm Kelly Wacker. Thanks for joining me to hear a reading from Aspen and Moonlight, my debut novel that was just published last month by Bold Strokes Books. The story is set in the mountains of Colorado and revolves around two women. Melissa Warren, an art historian who's researching the mysterious artist who created three paintings she inherited from her grandmother, and Sula Johansson, the director of the Colorado Bear Conservancy, who is the artist's great-granddaughter. Melissa is introduced to Sula by Betty Anderson, the no-nonsense owner of the guest ranch where Melissa is staying. Sula has a big secret to keep and is not keen on some outsider who's asking questions about her family. In this scene, Melissa is meeting with Betty at the guest ranch lodge to show her photos of the paintings. A dusty old blue Ford pickup came down the road and pulled up in front of the lodge. Betty, her gray hair smoothly combed and pulled back in a ponytail, and wearing a flannel shirt, jeans, and boots, slid out of the tall four-wheel drive truck. She walked briskly up the stairs. "I'm so sorry I kept you waiting. I went to check on my bees, and it took a little longer than I thought."
"You keep bees?"
"I do. It's kind of a hobby, but they're really good for the pasture, too. I put the boxes out in one of the pastures away from the buildings."
"And you get honey from them, I assume."
"Of course." Betty looked at Melissa like she'd be crazy to consider otherwise. "We rob the bees in early summer. In a good year, we get some in the fall, too. I like the early honey the best, though. The fall honey is a little bitter for my taste, but some people like it better."
"I had no idea. I thought honey was honey."
Melissa considered what Betty had said.
"I understand that the bees pollinate flowers, but how do they help the grass in a pasture?"
"We're an all-organic operation and have clover mixed in with the grass."
"And the clover fixes nitrogen in the soil."
"Yes, exactly. The bees love the clover, and the clover feeds the grass."
"You must be a gardener," Betty said, squinting at her.
"I am, and I don't use pesticides. I like the bugs," Melissa said.
"Well, I take that back. I could really do without the fire ants that are all over the South."
"We don't have those here, thank goodness. I've read about them in farming and ranching magazines, though. They sound like nasty critters."
"They are."
Melissa noticed a honeybee crawling across the top of Betty's shoulders, heading toward her neck.
"Oh, there's a bee on you."
Betty looked at the bee calmly, raising a weather-worn finger to it. The bee kept on walking, right on to the tip of her finger. Smiling at it, she held it up to a petunia in a hanging basket. The bee flew over to it and disappeared into the throat of the flower.
"He'll find his way back to the hive when he's done here. You know they can forage up to 4 miles away from a hive. Amazing little things they are."
Betty smiled at the bee like it was a child.
"Wow, I can't believe it didn't sting you."
"They only sting if they feel threatened. My husband says I'm a bee charmer," Betty said with a soft laugh, and then pointed to Melissa's bulging messenger bag. "Let's go in, shall we? Have a look at those old photos."
Sitting beside Betty at one of the tables in the common room, Melissa opened the photo album to the pictures that her great-grandmother had taken, pointing out the ones labeled as Buckhorn Creek Ranch. As they studied the pictures together, Betty seemed to look at her as much as the photos.
"I bet you're a good teacher."
"What makes you say that, Betty?"
"You talk with your hands." Betty smiled at her in the same way she smiled at the bee on the porch.
"And you're very, I don't know, expressive, passionate. You explain what you're talking about, and you don't make me feel dumb."
"You're not dumb." Melissa was shocked that Betty might think that about herself.
"I never went to college."
"That doesn't matter. Some of the smartest people I know didn't go to college, and some of the dumbest did. They know a lot of things about a specific topic, but they don't have a lot of life experience or common sense.
There are different kinds of intelligence, you know?"
"I think I do." Betty smiled and adjusted her reading glasses on the bridge of her nose, squinting at the next photo.
"I think this one was taken at the ranch. See this building here? That's the lodge we're in right now. The office was added on in the 50s when my parents expanded the guest ranch business."
Melissa was delighted by Betty's response, taking notes as she flipped through the photo album and talked. Betty recognized several buildings, identifying the ones still on the property and others that weren't. She knew the lake with the big trees and boulders, calling it Little Bear Lake, and said that it was on the ranch.
"What was your great-grandmother's name?"
Betty peered at Melissa over the rim of her glasses.
Evelyn Llewellyn. Betty looked thoughtful for a moment and then shook her head. I don't think I've ever heard her come across that name. When Melissa showed her the page with the missing photos labeled Ursula, Betty became quiet and didn't say anything immediately. That is strange, isn't it? Betty said after a moment. It is. I'm assuming it's the artist. I mean, how many Ursula Bergens could there have been here at that time? I'm very curious as to why it's missing, and it makes me wonder even more about Ursula. I know I've never met her, but I figure it's okay if I call her by her first name. I'm really beginning to wonder what she looked like. I'd like to have a face to put to a name. Speaking of faces, Betty flipped back a few pages. Some of the faces in these photos I recognize from my family photos. See this fellow here, on the tall black horse in the back? He's also in that photo over there by the fireplace. Don't know who he is, though. Melissa stood and walked over to inspect the framed photo of a group of wranglers wearing chaps and big hats. They were leaning on a wooden fence, a corral it looked like, with the blurred shapes of horses in the background. She agreed that the man on the black horse in her photo was the same man standing near the edge of a group holding a lariat in one hand. What a strange coincidence that I'd make reservations here, not even knowing it was connected to my great-grandmother. Melissa rubbed her index finger contemplatively across her lower lip. When she turned around, Betty had taken off her reading glasses and was holding them in both hands, gazing at her with the same intensity she had witnessed the day she checked into the ranch. The wrinkles in the furrow of Betty's brow deepened. I'm not a big believer in coincidence, Melissa. I've come to think that things happen for a reason, even if it takes you a while to figure out the reason. Melissa nodded, but didn't immediately reply. In truth, she wasn't sure how she felt about coincidence versus destiny, or even if she believed in fate. That's an interesting idea, Melissa said, walking back to the table. She took the prints of Ursula's paintings from her bag and laid them out on the table, explaining how she had inherited them and that she hoped she could find out where they were painted and perhaps even discover some other paintings by the artist while she was staying in Buckhorn. Betty put her reading glasses back on and inhaled sharply when she looked at the painting of the woman in the clearing with the bear peering out at her from the trees. Yes, that one's interesting, isn't it? It's different from the others, almost like an illustration of a story. It's very interesting. I loved all of them as a child, but I really loved this one, Melissa said fondly. I know it's silly, but I used to make up stories about it, and I pretended I was there with them. They were kind of like my childhood imaginary friends. Betty looked at Melissa sideways, then glanced at the other two. These are very nice paintings, aren't they? Yeah, she was a good painter, and I think she deserves a place in art history. I don't want her to completely disappear. It happens to artists all the time, especially women artists. Betty tapped a finger on the river picture. I might know where that place is. Really? Maybe, if it's the place I'm thinking of. Can I go there? Can I drive or hike? It would be amazing. Well, you can't drive there, but our half-day trail ride goes past it. Betty moved her glasses down the bridge of her nose and grinned. Oh, God, I haven't been on a horse in 20 years. That's all right. Most of our guests have never been on a horse, and we cater to those folks. We have calm, sure-footed, and level-headed horses just for them, Betty laughed. Well, for you. Melissa looked at the photo. She'd love to see the place that might have inspired the painting. Perhaps she could even take a photo and have then and now images for comparison. The answer seemed obvious. I'll do it. Good. Go by the livery, or call, to make a reservation. It's a popular ride, and we offer it every day now during peak tourist season. Melissa put her hand on Betty's arm. Thank you so much, Betty. This feels like a good start. If you think of anything else, please let me know, even if you think it's insignificant. I'm glad to help, dear, Betty patted her hand. She folded her readers and tucked them into her shirt pocket. If you'll excuse me, I've got some work to do in the office. Melissa thanked her again for her time, packed her things, and then headed out to her car. As she stepped off the porch, a hummingbird chattered, zipping past her on its way to chase off a rival at the feeder. She looked out toward the barns below, where cars parked in front of them and people seemed to be gathering. From her vantage point on the stairs, she could see horses saddled, but wearing halters instead of bridles. They stood in the paddock, eating hay contentedly and swishing their tails against the flies, waiting for the next trail ride. Before she went back to her cabin, she'd stop by the livery and see about signing up for that ride. Asulu pulled open the filing cabinet drawer. The phone on her desk rang. "Hey, what are you doing?" Sula immediately recognized the voice as Betty's. She was an old and close friend of the family, more like an aunt than a friend, really. But it was unusual for her to call in the middle of a workday. "I'm at the office." Sula tucked her phone between her cheek and shoulder, putting the folder in her hand into the open cabinet drawer and pushing it closed. "Is everything okay?" "Are you by yourself?" "Yes, what's up?" Why was Betty calling her? Sula sat down in her desk chair and grabbed a honey candy from the bowl on her desk, removing the yellow cellophane wrapper quietly before popping it into her mouth. "I've got a guest at the ranch, an art historian, college professor from Georgia. She has some paintings by your great-grandmother and is here for the summer hoping to find out more about her. She's doing research, she said. She's looking for more of her paintings." "Whoa, slow down. Someone has some of my great-grandmother's paintings?" "Yes, three of them." "Really? What kind?" Sula's parents had several of her paintings, as did she and her cousins. One of them was in her office, in fact. She spun around in her chair and looked at the small watercolor painting of rocks and a waterfall hanging on the wall. "Two landscapes and," Betty paused, "a woman and a bear in the forest." Sula inhaled reflexively, nearly swallowing the candy. She wasn't aware that anyone outside of her family had any of her great-grandmother's paintings, and her family preferred it that way. "Sula, you still there?" Sula coughed. "Yeah, I'm still here. I'm just surprised." "I know," Betty said with a short laugh. "That's why I called." "You said she teaches in Georgia. How'd they get there?" "She grew up here in Colorado. Her family still lives here." "That makes some sense." "You ought to talk to her, Sula." "I don't know, Betty. What makes you so sure?" "I've got a feeling about her." "You and those damn feelings. You know they're usually right." "Yeah, but what? All that's kind of personal. You know what I mean." "I'm not telling you to kick the skeletons out of the closet, Sula. I'm just saying that she strikes me as someone with an honest question. She's not looking to make money. She's really connected to those paintings personally. Her great-grandmother used to come here back in the 20s and 30s, it looks like. I think she's got a real connection to this place and to our families." "I'll consider it." "Good. I'll take that to mean I can tell her to drop by your office sometime soon to discuss it. Her name's Melissa Warren, by the way." "That's not what I meant, Betty." Sula tried to sound firm and resolute. She really hated it when Betty told her what to do. "Betty? Betty?" Sula looked at the phone. The call had ended. Sula wanted to tell Betty no. No, she did not want to talk to some stranger about her family. But she was also very curious, and Betty had a track record of being right. Sula rolled the yellow cellophane candy wrapper between her fingers into a ball and tossed it into the wastebasket under her desk. If Betty thought she should do something, she probably should. Thanks for listening. If you like what you heard and you'd like to read the rest of Aspen and Moonlight, it's available from Bold Strokes Books and everywhere that books are sold. If you'd like to learn more, you can also go to my website. It's www.kellywacker.com.